This is an ABC podcast.
On ABC Radio Victoria, you're with Peter Somerville for the Victorian Country Hour.
Yes, good afternoon. A short country hour for you today, coming to you live during the lunch break at the cricket. Definitely no cricket talk in the next 25 minutes, though. But don't go anywhere. There's plenty happening today. JBS has announced it has completed its acquisition of pork business Rivoli. And over the fence in the red meat sector, they're worried about COVID cutting meat processing shifts. But we start this afternoon with the all-important weather update. You might have heard the weather's a bit sus in Sydney. It's also a bit grey here in parts of Victoria. Let's get the latest on that situation. We cross to the Weather Bureau, where senior forecaster Tom Delamotte is on the line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Yeah, a bit wet in some parts.
Yeah, it has been. We're starting to see that tropical air mass extend down over Victoria as a surface trough deepens over western parts. So quite strong easterly winds brought fairly persistent rain to the Otways this morning, and we did see rainfall totals up to around 97 millimetres in parts of the Otways. Was really focused to the sort of peaks of the ranges through there. Elsewhere in the state, we've generally seen some rainfall totals in the 5 to 15 millimetre range over southern and eastern parts, with just the odd fall a little bit higher than that. And the rain does continue to stream down over eastern parts of the state at the moment, so sort of patchy rain with the odd thunderstorm or two embedded within it over the east. And it's in the more clearer or slightly clearer air over central Victoria and also extending into parts of western Victoria that we're likely to see some thunderstorms develop as we move into the afternoon. And they could potentially be severe thunderstorms, bringing heavy rainfall, potentially even some damaging winds and large hail. So I imagine we're going to have a fairly busy afternoon in terms of warnings for thunderstorms in a fairly broad part of Victoria under threat from those severe thunderstorms extending from the northeast across central parts and into parts of western Victoria as well.
Are any of those warnings out yet, or are they still to come?
Yeah, so the severe thunderstorm warnings are still to come. We're sort of monitoring conditions, and we'll start to issue warnings as we see those thunderstorms become severe or about to become severe. But we do have some severe weather warnings out at the moment. So one of those was for heavy rain about the Otways. That heavy rain risk has now eased, and that warning will be cancelled shortly. But we also have a severe weather warning out for damaging winds about the sort of central coastal fringe, so extending from around Wilson's Prom up towards Mornington Peninsula and the Bellarine Peninsula as well, and then extending down the Surf Coast and the Otway Coast. So we do expect those easterly winds to strengthen, particularly late this afternoon into this evening, and we could see some damaging gusts on that coastal fringe up to around 90 kilometres an hour tonight before those winds ease in the early hours of tomorrow morning.
But Tom, today is not the last of that rain.
That's right, yeah, the trough continues to deepen over the west of the state tomorrow, continues to drag in that tropical air mass. I think we're going to see a fairly significant thunderstorm outbreak over Victoria tomorrow, with quite potent conditions for thunderstorms with that really humid air mass and also some favourable conditions in the upper atmosphere as well. So, yeah, quite a widespread risk of severe thunderstorms across the state tomorrow. It really looks like only the Mallee, which is going to miss out on that thunderstorm risk, and much of the rest of the state, apart from maybe the Gippsland coast, is going to be in the firing line for severe thunderstorms. So do keep a close eye on that tomorrow. We could see thunderstorms bring damaging winds, heavy rainfall that leads to flash flooding, and also large hail. So particularly if you're out camping or enjoying the outdoors, do keep a close eye on the warnings and the radar, not only today, but also into tomorrow afternoon. But it does look like the weather is going to gradually start to contract eastwards as we move into Friday. So there will be a bit of a clearing trend on Friday. We're still going to have a thunderstorm risk and a severe thunderstorm risk over much of the state, but it will start to move eastwards as we move into Friday afternoon and evening, and leaving us with a much more settled weekend across the state.
All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to a clearer weekend, I'm sure, no doubt, at this time of year. Tom, thanks for the update.
Not a problem at all.
Cheers. Tom Delamotte there at the Bureau of Meteorology, very patiently working in with us during the lunch break at the cricket here on the Country Hour.
The Victorian Country Hour with Peter Somerville on ABC Radio Victoria.
With some abattoirs operating at just 35% capacity right now, the nation's peak red meat industry body says Australia's food supply chain is once again at risk due to the effect COVID restrictions are putting on the workforce. CEO of the Australian Meat Industry Council, Patrick Hutchinson, says the current waiting times for PCR test results is forcing abattoir workers to isolate for extended periods, slowing down meat processing. He says he wants the federal government to supply free rapid antigen tests to the sector and prioritise PCR testing results for workers.
If government policy means that we keep losing workers due to isolation, then that's going to be it already. What we're seeing is a number of facilities around Australia on the eastern seaboard are closing due to the fact that there's no people. This is a major, major, major issue. It's going to impact everyone in the supply chain from the farmer to the consumer, and we've got to get it sorted. If we cannot get an emergency scenario in place where the food production system, not meat, just all food production systems, be treated the same as health, we will see product off the shelves, and we're seeing it now. We're hearing about PCR testing where you cannot even get the PCR test before isolation is supposed to conclude. If that's what's going to be happening, give us the rapid antigen test and let us then knock these people out of the system and get them back to work.
Meanwhile, Midfield Group processes meat products in Warrnambool. Its general manager, Dean McKenna, says he supports priority access to PCR tests for workers in the food supply chain as worker shortages are creating processing backlogs.
We're running about 35% at the moment, and we had, prior to this week, we had challenges with our workforce due to COVID and the reduced number of migrant labour and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we're running very, very slowly at the moment on limited shifts.
In addition to the reduced workforce purely due to being able to find workers, what has the COVID-19 testing requirements done to your business?
Lately, it's made it very challenging, and especially the last 2 weeks, we're rapid testing, now this latest wave, if we call it that, we're rapid testing as per the government guidelines. You know, people that have symptoms, we either drop the tests off to them or they come and get a test, if in doubt, and the close contacts. But we can test one person with three rapid tests and we can get two different results. You know, the first test might be positive, so we test again, then we get two negatives. So it's a little bit confusing.
And have you had issues with the extended waiting time for the return of PCR tests for your workers as well?
Yes, we have, but the next issue we've got is, I believe in Warrnambool, we can only get PCR testing at Deakin, and it's a drive-through service, and a lot of our people, due to the nature of their background, they either walk to work or ride to work, and now we're trying to work out how we can get them through this service, because we don't want to put healthy people or deemed healthy people in a car with someone that could be suspected of having COVID.
You mentioned that you're running at 35% production at the moment. What has that meant for Midfield Meat's processing capacity?
There's a big backlog. We're not active in the markets as we normally would be, nor are we with our direct consignment. We're still taking our regulars, but we have a very, very big backlog of livestock around us, both sheep and cattle.
Have you had to divert any of your livestock that you'd usually receive to other abattoirs?
We can't divert to other abattoirs. We've had a number of other abattoirs contact us recently wanting us to process for them. We can't because we've got too much of our own livestock or our own supply around us. And other abattoirs, it's just the industry, like a lot of industries, really struggling at this point in time.
The Australian Meat Industry Council is calling for a quicker turnaround of PCR tests for workers in the supply chain, including meat workers, such as what we see in the health industry. He also would like rapid antigen tests to either be free or subsidised and prioritised for workers in the food supply chain. Is that something you also support?
Yes, I agree. I support that. I believe their agenda's, you know, a good one, but the cost isn't as big an issue to us as what the timeliness of turning testing around. and getting people back to work.
When you've been speaking with people in your workforce, you mentioned you have got a large amount of migrant workers in your facilities. Is there a lot of confusion or fear around COVID-19 amongst that workforce?
Yes, there is. And you could have three or four people living in a house. So if one person goes down, or the confusion around it, if they get a sniffle or a cold, or they're not real sure, even some people that have no symptoms are refusing to come to work because they believe it's widespread in the community. But we do have a number of workers that are refusing to come to work, and they have no symptoms, but they're just refusing to come to work.
General Manager of Midfield Group Meat Processors in Warrnambool, Dean McKenna, speaking there with Jane McNaughton. 1:10 on your short country hour. Meanwhile, in the pork industry, the Brazilian meat giant JBS this morning announced it has completed its acquisition of pork farming and processing business Rivalea Holdings. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission investigated the deal, however, ultimately gave it the green light. JBS Australia declined our request for an interview, but in a statement, CEO Brent Eastwood said he believed his company could work with the industry to create an improved and more efficient pork processing business for Rivalea customers. However, a small-scale pork producer from central Victoria, Tammy Jonas, is still concerned.
Look, for the small-scale sector of the industry, I think it's quite a concern. We've had a reduction in the number of owners of slaughter facilities in this country that's been going on for decades. And so further consolidation into one more multinational corporation is not good news for those of us who are very small scale.
Do you think anything will change as a result of this, though?
If you go on JBS's track record in other parts of the world, the likelihood is that yes, the service kills that they're talking about continuing, they may continue to do for example, for the supermarkets, because they're really quite large service kills. But to continue for those of us who might slaughter between 2 and 20 pigs a month, it's much less certain that that would remain a viable option for them to continue with.
Do you have any concerns for your business?
We do, especially because we've been vocal on the issue. But we do. It's kind of in keeping with concerns we've had the entire decade. We've been farming, same as others who are farming pigs at a small scale. And that is as we continue to lose small-scale abattoirs and are reliant on very large industrial abattoirs who mostly work with large contracts or are vertically integrated with their own animals. It's just not of great interest to them to continue to provide that service for us.
So are you putting contingency plans in place?
We are. So here at our farm, we're actually in the planning phases of a small-scale abattoir on farm for us and about 9 or 10 other local farms.
Tammy Jonas there. Meanwhile, Tim Kingmer, the president of the Victorian Farmers Federation's pig group, trusts JBS's assurances.
Well, I think it's a positive thing. When anyone invests in your industry, they see the positives. And I feel, that JBS will push Rivalea forward and our industry forward with us family farmers. The VFF's concern through its producers was around the service kill at Diamond Valley. And to JBS's credit, they've even acknowledged that even today, that they're going to actually try to increase that. So I think it's all very positive.
You trust that assurance from JBS?
Well, you've got to trust it. I think if you look at their other acquisitions in, for example, red meat, they haven't got rid of third-party service kills. So, I've got to trust that. And that's just, I guess, where I sit.
Some smaller producers still feel a bit nervous despite that assurance and even today with this deal having gone through. Is that founded? Should they be feeling uncomfortable?
Well, at the end of the day, they can feel uncomfy. We all, we brought the issues to them. We brought the issues to the ACCC. And to JBS's credit, they have continually been in contact with the VFF and they've continually said nothing will change. So I guess I'm comfortable with that and time will tell. I guess from my point of view, one little change that I'd really love to see, and JBS has talked about, and that is still over 50% of our processed meats are imported. JBS is a big processor. So if they can, you know, keep increasing the Australian product for Australians to buy, that'll be a great positive for our industry. So that's the conversations I've had, you know, with people from JBS and Rivalea. So here's hoping that that happens, because if we keep clawing back a few percent each year of that processed meat, Aussies want to buy Aussie products. Let us get it on the shelves and in the butcher shops so they can eat it.
Tim Kingmar, a pig producer and president of the VFF's Pig Group, speaking there about the completion of that deal between JBS and Rivalea.
The Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
The market's just around the corner for you, but before we get there, some sad news. It was a horror weekend for vets and farmers in the West Wimmera, charged with shooting many hundreds of sheep injured in the Pelagolo fire. Time was of the essence in getting the gruesome task done, so animals didn't suffer any longer than they had to. Banjo Patterson, State Agency Commander with Agriculture Victoria, says the initial estimate of around 4,600 sheep killed has risen substantially.
So I think in total, on the properties that were assessed, it was around about, well, just over 6,600 sheep that were lost, and around about 18 cattle. There were some unconfirmed reports of additional sheep and cattle losses, but we haven't been able to confirm those. Nevertheless, that's a significant number and a great loss for individuals involved.
And of those, Banjo, can you tell me how many were actually killed in the fire and how many had to be put down because they were injured?
I haven't got the exact figures in front of me at the moment. However, the majority of them were lost actually in the fire, and a relatively small proportion were those that were injured and had to be euthanised by our field staff.
And I suppose it was a combination of AgVic vets, but also local vets and farmers themselves doing that work?
Yes. At the end of the day, the landholder has responsibility for their own livestock. So if they elect to put down their own animals, that's certainly within their rights. There were a number of private vets involved, both as owners of affected properties and vets that assisted with some of their clients and some of the affected people. However, those figures are the best estimates that we were able to collect from all the affected landholders in the fire footprint.
And I'm sure, Banjo, obviously awful work, but time being of the essence and wanting to put those animals out of their suffering as soon as possible.
Certainly that's our main focus. Our highest priority following a fire like this is to assess any injured animals and then make a decision as to whether they can be treated or whether, unfortunately, they have to be euthanised and put down.
And as awful as it is to think about, just in practical terms, I suppose, for those who were shooting their animals, just even a lot of ammunition to go through. Do you know if there are any issues like that of people not having access to enough ammunition?
No, that wasn't an issue in this case. We, as an agency was responsible for the welfare issues, we have plenty of ammunition to deal with situations like that. That's part of our preparedness, well, particularly the high-risk season of summer when fires are commonplace in the Australian landscape.
And just for those who were involved, must have been extremely difficult from a mental or emotional perspective, given that, well, firstly, farmers are in the business of caring for their animals and vets are in the business of saving lives, and neither of them want to be ending lives. So it must have been really difficult.
It is always a very difficult job, very heartbreaking job, and it can be a very soul-destroying job, particularly where there are very large numbers involved. We have appropriate training and support measures in place for our staff, both during and following an incident like this. And there are a range of other support agencies that are much more aligned to the general population, be they affected farmers or simply just members of the local communities that can well be affected by such an incident in their own area.
In terms of burying those animals that had died or had to be put down, Were there any, was there any red tape or any regulations that had to be adhered to?
There are regulations in terms of very large numbers of livestock that is the responsibility for our Environmental Protection Authority, but they do have special arrangements in place for emergencies like this where they can fast-track approvals.
That was Banjo Patterson, State Agency Commander with Agriculture Victoria, speaking there with Angus Verley. And if you'd like any support from Agriculture Victoria, you can contact the Recovery Manager on 0427 694 185. That's 0427 694 185. 20 minutes past one. Given this is your short country hour, we'd best get to the markets. We start this afternoon at Leongatha with Brendan Fletcher.
G'day. There are 850 head pen for the first sale of 2022, with a couple of regular orders missing, in a cheaper market compared to the last sale of 2021. Quality was limited, with cows making up almost half the sale. Trade cattle eased 15 to 20 cents. Grown steers and bullocks lost 10 to 20. Well-finished manufacturing steers eased 10. Cows were mostly 10 cents cheaper, while bulls lifted slightly. Grown steers sold from 434 to 455, bullocks 438 to 447, heavy manufacturing steers 370 to 447, most light and medium weight cows 260 to 338, heavyweights 320 to 370, better shaped heavy bulls 360 to 395, with dairy lots from 310 to 365. This is Brendan Fletcher reporting for MLA.
Thanks, Brendan. Sticking with the cattle, we head to Warrnambool with Eric Gastrain.
Prices were mainly cheaper in the small numbered yarding of 352 mixed quality cattle here at Warrnambool. Not all the regular buyers were present, and prices for most cows dropped 60 to 70 cents, with beef cows mainly 30 to 40 cents less. Plain quality young cattle averaged 30 cents down on the final sale of last year. On a positive note, restockers paid 20 to 30 cents more for young and grown cattle, while the trade paid equal to slightly more for better quality veelers and yearlings. Veelers sold from 480 to 540 cents, restockers paying 510 to 548. The dairy and plain quality yearlings were from 300 to 360 cents, and a pen of better bred heifers made 488 cents a kilogram and went to a restocker. Restockers purchased the better bred grown steers and paid 380 to 500 cents. Manufacturing D2 steers made 300 to 320, and these averaged 60 cents cheaper. Beef cows were between 305 and 330 cents, with a grown heifer at 342 and a restocker paid 346. Ben, Eric Australian reporting for MLA.
Thanks, Eric. And lastly, this afternoon, we head to Hamilton Lambs with Chris Agnew.
Thanks, Peter. At Hamilton Agents Yard, 25,958 lambs, where the quality was from very good to plain, with lambs showing dryness in the wool, these lambs suitable only for the paddock. Despite this, there was some very good offering of lambs suitable for the trade. There was a near full field of buyers. However, not all were fully active as due to the work shut down by COVID infections and with no replacement staff available. Competition was still in force for the lightweight lambs. For back to the paddock, in the market, it was $10 to $15 per head softer over most categories, with the very good well-finished lambs least affected. New season's lambs 12 to 16 made from 94 to 170. Trade lambs 18 to 22, 150 to 189 to average around 780 to 850. Medium lambs 22 to 26, 170 to 210, averaging 750 to 830. Heavy lambs over 26 made up to 221. At Hamilton, this is Chris Agnew reporting for MLA.
Thanks, Chris. And that's all we have time for on your Country Hour this afternoon. Don't forget abc.net.au/rural. Have a great afternoon.